The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Loved, please walk with us for this hour. I'm going to begin with our opening words by Heidi Cottam, entitled This Faith. Let us be a faith that gathers, reaching for one another through the walls of hate others build, through the cages of ignorance and arrogance, and through the fear that burns city streets. Let us be a faith that sees a vision of a better world, more compassionate, more just, more holy, and with more love. There is a faith that binds up the broken, cauterizes battle wounds with the balm of peace, sings longer and louder than the trumpets of war. Let us be that faith too. Let us be the ones who do not tread lightly in this world, but build it up with our love, who hold up the mirror of worth and dignity, who are the sanctuary others seek. But first, let us be a faith that worships together, here, this morning, in this space, at this moment. Let us be a faith. Now Phil will do our chalice lighting.
Good morning. Our chalice lighting this morning is by the Reverend Richard S. Gilbert. O flaming chalice, symbol of a free faith, burn with the holy oil of heaven and service. Spread warmth and light and hope. Warm hearts grown cold with indifference, light dark places with injustice, rekindle hope in despair. May we bring fuel for thy fire of love. May the oil of loving kindness flow from us to thy leaping flame. May hands of service shelter thee, that no winds of hate may extinguish the brightness. May thy light and warmth be eternal. May we be the keepers of the flame. As I light the peace lamp this morning, please respond with the words, and all the people of the world. May peace be with us and all the people of the world.
Has tried us, hope inside us, leading the way on the road from greed to giving. Love will guide us through the hard night. If you cannot sing like me,
Lorraine will do our reading.
Good morning, everyone. Today our reading is from Dorothy Day, and here it is. People say, what is the sense of our small effort? They cannot see that we must lay one brick at a time, take one step at a time. A pebble cast into a pond causes ripples that spread in all directions. Each one of our thoughts, words, and deeds is like that. No one has a right to sit down and feel hopeless. There is too much work to do.
We're all in for a treat today. We have a guest speaker, Elisa McBride. And Elisa is the director of the Montgomery County Reentry Initiative, which is under the umbrella of Family Services of Montgomery County. Elisa has been a social worker for the past 25 years, the last 12 of which she has worked with people who were incarcerated and newly released. So I will turn it over to her and she can tell you more.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. I wish I could see your faces, but I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. I am a social worker with Family Services in Montgomery County, right down the street from you on Ridge Pike. And Family Services has been around since 1900, not at our exact location, but we've been around serving the people of Montgomery County. Our goal is to respond to the ever-changing needs of the community. So you can imagine that in the last 120 years, we've done diverse and varied things. And for instance, right now, in the world of COVID-19, we've really been changing up what we do. We recently got a grant to do contact tracing for COVID-19. We're meeting with our clients in parking lots, on porches, in driveways. We recently had a very spirited debate with several of our octogenarian Meals on Wheels volunteers who were desperate to continue to serve their clients and deliver their meals despite the risks of the virus. They won that debate, by the way. But part of being a social service agency and a nonprofit is responding to what's occurring in your community, the needs of your community. As Ann said, I've been working at Family Services for quite a while, and we have quite a bit of offerings, and I've done many of them in the last 20 years. I've actually worked at Family Services for 20 years, and our offerings are divided into five categories: providing family support and education, promoting health and wellness, engaging communities, caring for older adults, and reducing recidivism. But this morning, I'm going to talk to you exclusively about reducing recidivism, because that is what I've been doing for the last 10 plus years, and I'm incredibly passionate about it. So I am the Director of Reentry Services for Family Services, and I thought I would begin by telling you a little bit about how I and Family Services got interested in doing reentry and how our work has evolved over the last decade. So working at the same place for 20 years would not be possible if it weren't for the fact that I could switch it up and do different things. So I have a wonderful leadership at Family Services, and every few years you had the opportunity to kind of jump into a new project. And if you had an idea for a project and you presented it to the leadership, they usually would give you a shot at it if it was at all possible. So about 11 years ago, I went to my supervisor and I said, hey, Montgomery County Correctional Facility is around the corner from our office. Why aren't we doing any programming there? We were doing a lot at the time. I was doing parenting programming in the community and other settings, domestic violence shelters, rehabs, and I thought, you know, why aren't we offering anything there? So my director said, well, if you can get in there, okay, you can give it a try. So my first opportunity to go to Montgomery County Correctional Facility, there was a big training. So the warden was holding a training with about 100, 150 people who wanted to come in and do a variety of things. And he began with a speech, and it's something I will never forget. He said, listen, 99.99% of the people that are housed here in this facility are good people who've made a mistake. And there, for the grace of God, could be any one of us. So if I do allow you to come into my facility, you're going to be treating the men and women here with dignity and with respect. And I knew immediately that I really wanted to be in that facility, and that the warden was somebody I wanted to get to know. But I ended up getting to know him a little faster than I anticipated, because we did a little brief going around and saying your name. And then after the training was over, the warden looked at me and made a beeline right in my direction. And I was a little nervous about that. I couldn't imagine what he wanted to talk to me about. He's a lovely man, but he can be a little intimidating. So he came right over to me and he said, hey, are you a social worker? And I said, yes, I am. And he shared with me that many individuals who are incarcerated at MCCF enter in the winter or in the summer with shorts and short sleeve shirts, and they leave in the winter and they're cold and they don't have coats. And he asked me if I could help him get coats for his men and women. So we immediately began a coat drive that we do with other community partners that we have. And we've been doing that every year for the last 10 years. I don't know if you know much about the correctional facility. I know it's right around the corner from your church as well. But just to give you a little history as to who's in there, it is in a place where people with low-level offenses remain for an average of 6 to 8 months. If their offenses are more significant, they're usually transferred to state prisons after their convictions. Under normal non-COVID-19 related circumstances, it houses approximately 3,000 people at one time, and it releases 6,000 people into the community every year. Currently, the population is a little bit lower than normal because they've been doing a really good job of trying to discharge people as quickly as possible, because living in a congregate setting puts you at greater risk for getting COVID-19. So we've been very integral in helping people do reentry planning as they've gotten out in the last 3 months. Okay, so let me see. So what happened was, I began going into MCCF to teach a parenting class that I was already teaching. So I was doing it in the community, and I started doing it with women at MCCF. And what I realized very early on was, the class was great, but these people had a lot of needs beyond just my little offering once a week. Most of the time when people are incarcerated, they have a lot of serious losses. They lose employment, they lose housing, they may lose custody of their children who will go into foster care or stay with another family member. So when they get out, they've got a lot they have to put into place immediately, and it's overwhelming. So I began to do, and again, my boss was very understanding, because none of this was covered by any grants that we had. She just kept telling me, if you can do this on top of what you're supposed to be doing, then fine. So I started doing case management with these women prior to getting out to help them determine, what do I need when I get out? What can I start doing now to prepare? And then when they did get out, to help them reintegrate to their families and communities and be a support to them. So once I was doing that for, I don't know, maybe a year, my supervisor said, well, I see that you're going to stay there. You're very passionate about this. So how about we do write some grants for programming that's specific to people who are incarcerated? So we began doing Parenting Inside Out, which is specifically geared towards the needs of incarcerated individuals, and Crossroads, which is sort of a life skills training program for people who are at the crossroads. And about the same time, the warden came to me and said, hey, we've had an idea that we've wanted to implement for a long time, but I'm going to need you to be the one to actually do the work. So what they wanted was a family visitation room. We started on the women's side. A beautiful room that the women painted, so much talent, murals all over the walls, toys, books, games donated by mostly churches in the area. And the deal was that if people graduated from my class, and eventually we had a class on the men's side too, and they got my recommendation, they could have a contact visit in the playroom with their children. So that would mean initially it was me being at every visit with the and I would sit outside the room. So I would give them space to have those conversations and play. But if there was ever any problem, I would go into the room and just try to smooth things over. So we started doing the family visitation room, which really speaks to the reading that Anne chose. Research really shows it's good for kids to have contact with their parents when they're incarcerated. There's a lot of anxiety over that separation process, and kids can't really often articulate their worries. They're afraid for their parents. They don't know where they are. They don't know if they're hurt. They don't know if they're okay. And what we've found, and the research supports this, is once children can have regular contacts with their parents, typically they end up being those issues tend to resolve themselves. The other benefit of having the family visitation room is we got to know other family members that were supporting the individuals we were working with. So we got to know their children. If their grandparent was raising the child, we got to know them. If they were in foster care, we got to work with the caseworker for the child. So we ended up beginning to be able to support all of those individuals as well. So we were able to connect them to support services, concrete needs, and just work together to try to get that family back up and running as soon as the individual got out. So slowly, as all of this evolved, I acquired more staff to come in with me. We're up to 6 reentry staff now at Family Services. We do programming, case management, classes, visitation rooms, and both the men and the women's side now. And I can't tell you how rewarding it's been. But one of the things we realized was it's great to be able to help people one by one and two by two and in groups and their families, but there's some pretty significant system-wide change that needs to occur if we're going to help returning citizens be successful. It's not just helping individuals and families. It's about seeing what's going on in our system and how can we close those gaps, remove those barriers, and make it easier for people when they get out to experience success. So we decided to form an initiative. We started again with the Women's Reentry Initiative because there were a few of us and we didn't want to bite off more than we could chew, but eventually it became clear that everything we were doing for the women, all the system level change that needed to occur, was also pertinent to the men. So we've become the Montgomery County Reentry Initiative with over 170 members. We have corrections, probation, public defender's office, nonprofits, faith-based organizations. If someone from your church would like to be a part of our initiative, we'd be happy to have you. So the whole purpose, and it was actually very heartening to see that when we formed the initiative, how easy it was to get people to participate because everybody agreed that this was an issue. And they were just looking for a forum in which to gather together to address the issue. And I forgot to mention, and I shouldn't have because they are the most important members of the Reentry Initiative, is returning citizens. So we have a lot of our men and women we've been working with who are out, who come to our meetings, who are highly involved, and they drive a lot of what we do. And initially, they're usually pretty scared to come to our meetings because our meetings, our large coalition meetings are very large. But we also have action team meetings I'll speak of in a moment. But I have to say, I didn't have to do any prompting, guiding, scolding. Every member of that reentry initiative, from the wardens to the chief of probation to the chief of the public defender's office, anytime a reentrant speaks, offers an opinion, tells their experience, they are treated with the utmost of respect. They are the best to be telling us what we need to do better and different. So when we formed the initiative and in the time that we've been doing it, we've done 3 risk and needs assessments at Montgomery County Correctional Facility. So we've surveyed all of the men and women, and we made it worth their while by giving them some extra commissary to ask them, what do you need? You know, when you get out, when you're in here, what do you need support with? What resources exist? What resources don't exist? What are the big barriers that you face? And based on the information we've collected from doing those risk and needs assessments and our strategic planning committee, we have formed five action teams that address five specific issues. So our first one is accessing and maintaining employment. As you can imagine, a lot of employers do not want to hire individuals with criminal histories, which is a pretty big problem. Housing is probably our number one problem. And people need it immediately when they get out, especially if they need to reunify with their children quickly. You're probably aware that when kids go into foster care, you have a time-limited stretch to reunify with them, or you risk losing your parental rights. And housing is a very important component of that. Financial wellness. People are trying to figure out how to balance the very little amount of money that they have. Accessing timely and effective mental health, medication, and drug and alcohol services post-release. That is huge because, as we've discovered and is, again, supported in the research, the large majority of people who are incarcerated have undergone some pretty significant trauma. And there's a lot of self-medicating, a lot of mental health issues. So when people are discharged from the correctional facility, they need to be able to get connected to mental health or drug or alcohol supports quickly. So that's one of our major goals, is to help make that happen and make sure there's no interruption in medication when people get out, because health insurance is often something they lose as well. And then our last one is parenting, childcare, and natural supports. You know, how do we get them connected to their families, to their children, in a timely manner, and make that go as well as possible? If they have custody issues, how can we help them with that? Most children want to be with their parents, and with some support and guidance, a lot of the parents that we serve are able to step up to the plate. They just need to be able to be connected to resources as quickly as possible. So our five action teams meet monthly, and we don't just talk. We have action steps, and we are there to do things. And we've done quite a lot. Initially, securing an ID was one of our action items, but we've pretty much tackled that. So we now have avenues for people to get IDs. So we are doers. And I'm really excited about the things that we've done. One of the things I love about my field is that when you meet people where they're at a time of crisis, and you're able to offer a little bit of support, it can make a huge difference. And with returning citizens, I haven't done anything in my field that's made a bigger difference than this. I think one of your readings this morning was about ripples in the water. You know, if you connect people to the right supports, it doesn't just help them, it helps their children and their grandchildren and the rest of their family, because there really is a generational cycle of imprisonment in our country. I have seen so many of my clients over the last decade who have a parent in the same jail, a child in the same jail, a sibling in the same jail. So, you know, those families obviously did not get the support at the time that they needed it. So if we can do anything to make that happen, that is our goal. We also do concrete services for those who need it. We've developed a reentry closet, although we've taken over the entire basement of the agency, which I'm not sure my executive director appreciates, but he's being patient with me, because I had two individuals who went back to jail for shoplifting diapers. So now I always have diapers. I'm doing diaper drives all the time. We keep a closed closet so of donations from people we know, so that when someone has a job interview, they're able to put on something nice. We do Cradles to Crayons orders. We get kitchen supplies. So we do all kinds of things to try to meet the concrete needs of not just our reentrants, but their families while they're incarcerated, because oftentimes they're really having difficulty making ends meet. I could go on forever talking about reentry, but I know I have a time limit here. But I just want you to know it's something we're very passionate about. It's such a need right now, and it's getting a lot of attention in the national media, and I'm very excited about that because changes are coming, and people are recognizing that we need to really do some improvements in our criminal justice system because there are no throwaway people. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Elisa. I learned an awful lot today. Thank you for all the wonderful programs you're doing out there. And maybe some of us would be able to volunteer there. That would be wonderful. So coming up is the time for our Matters of the Heart. And you can ask Elisa some questions, but we'll start off after our musical interlude with things that make you happy. So joyous that you jumped out of bed this morning, or things that are weighing heavily on your heart, time for our joys and sorrows. And then also you can talk back with Elisa if you like. So we'll have our musical meditation now and then Matters of the Heart. Extinguish our chalice, but not its light, which we will carry out into the world with us and provide light to those who need it, like Elisa. And Dorothy will give us our closing words.
That Which is Worthy of Doing by Stephen J. Crump. That which is worthy of doing, create with your hands. That which is worthy of repeating, speak with a clear voice. That which is worthy of remembering, hold in your hearts. And that which is worthy of living, go and live it now.
We would be one.